How do people have a baby?
What's gay?
Out of your body book.
What is a period?
What is transgender?
What is a condom?
What is a sperm?
What is poop? I can't say it. What is puberty?
What would it be like to be a boy? But would a boy want to know what it's like to be a girl?
What is sex?
What is sex?
Welcome to What is Sex? Each episode, we'll discuss one anonymous question we've been asked.
You gotta start over. You sound so exasperated. That whole thing was okay. A sigh.
You're right. Okay. Welcome to What is Sex? Each episode, we'll discuss one anonymous question we've been asked by a kid while teaching sex ed. I'm Izzy.
I'm Rebecca. We are two of the co-founders of Yes, a nonprofit that provides sex-positive, intersectional, consent-based sexuality education to people of all ages. We believe it's never too early to start having these conversations. To learn more about us, check out our website, Yes2Consent, and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Yes2Consent.
Don't forget that you can contribute to the making of this podcast through our Patreon. Patreon.com/yes2consent. The link is in our description. And you can help make sure that this podcast stays afloat, that we can pay our guests, compensate them for their time and their thoughts, and maybe one day even pay ourselves.
Did you think that 5 years ago we would be paid for workshops? Like, I never really thought this would happen.
It's true. We were just, you know, little college students and college graduates with a dream in our hearts thinking, let's teach some consent. I didn't even know that was a job. I didn't know anybody got paid for teaching consent back then.
I don't know if anyone was teaching consent. No one I knew.
Today we're going to try something different. Instead of discussing a question we've gotten from a young person in one of our workshops, we're going to talk about a question that I had as a young person, and we're going to do another episode to talk about a question Rebecca had as a young person. So we're channeling our inner students today. So today we're talking about a question that I had when I was younger, especially in middle school, which was, how do I know when I'm in love? How do people know when they're in love?
I mean, when you suggested this question to me, my first thought was, whoa. I feel like profound. I feel like I don't know the answer. And sure I ask either. Myself that through different phases of every single relationship that I'm in. So I can't wait to talk about it.
Yeah, me too. Maybe we'll get to the bottom of it. This is fun, though, because I get to ask you, what do you think was the question behind my question? Like, I kind of know the question behind my own question, but what do you think?
You know, I have a little bit of a skewed answer to that, because I was chatting with someone about this before we recorded, and they brought to my attention the correlation when you're young between love and sex and intimacy, or maybe not intimacy, but love and sex. And that didn't even occur to me when you brought it up to me initially. So I'm a little bit like, maybe Izzy was thinking, like maybe little Izzy was thinking about your relationship in high school. And I'm just thinking about all the talks we've had about how you felt about sex then. And maybe you were concerned that it wasn't moral or just or right if you weren't loved or being like in a loving relationship or in quote unquote in love. So I think knowing you, that's sort of where my mind went.
That's funny because you're so right. Like, that's not what I was thinking when I like prepared for this workshop. And that wasn't, you know, I wasn't dating anyone when I started having this question, but I did think at the time that it wasn't right to have sex without it being in love. So I'm sure that was part of it, because I both wanted to know how you know you're in love, but then I also, I guess, probably also wanted to know, when is it okay to have sex? And if I thought that the sex depended on the love, it was really important to know the love thing, you know, get it right, because Because that was something I was thinking about. I was really concerned about getting it right about when you're in love, right? It's like either you are or you aren't, and I have to know. And maybe that was a big part of why. Because like if I accidentally had sex when I wasn't in love, was that going to be a big problem? So that's a great point. I along those lines of what I was just saying, actually, I was thinking that my question really came from a place of like, this seems like a really important thing, this whole love thing. And I really want to get it right. And I really don't know how to do that. So, it was sort of like, am I normal? Can I fall in love? Like, what's the deal with you just know? I feel like that's something a lot of people, like, you just know. I was really unsatisfied with that. So it was really just like, someone needs to give me a lot more information, but I'm sure you're right.
It's so interesting to hear you phrase it the way you phrase it, which is, I just wanted to get it right. Like, I wanted to be right. Because I think that is sort of at the root of a lot of anxiety for me in a relationship and being in love and establishing what that is. Of like, not so much for myself, but something of, how do I tell someone that I love them or that I'm in love with them if I'm not sure? Is that fair? If I feel it one day and I don't feel it the next, does that mean it was a lie?
Yeah, that's what I was worried about in middle school. I was freaked out
about
all of that. And to kind of slide into the second question of, like, when do I remember having this question, I don't know if it really all traces back to Gilmore Girls, but I kind of think it all traces back to Gilmore Girls. And I don't know if you watched Gilmore Girls, but...
Loosely.
Rory's first boyfriend is Dean.
I know.
I hope everybody knows.
Let me be clear. I remember the boyfriends.
Okay. So Rory's first boyfriend is Dean. And on their 3-month anniversary, he makes this big thing of it. And it all leads to him telling her that he's in love with her. And she freezes up. She gets scared. She didn't expect it. It makes her nervous. She doesn't know how to respond. And he, within seconds of her silence, he starts yelling at her and breaks up with her because she doesn't say it back. And she said, I just need a second to think. And he said, it's not something you think about. You either are or you aren't. And she said, well, that's not how it is for me. I need a second. And he's like, you can't have a second. You either feel it or you don't, and you clearly don't. And that's the end of their relationship, temporarily. I was just going to say, the only reason they ever got back together is because she says, I love you, you idiot. And then they can be back together. They could not get back together until she said it back.
Right. It always felt like there was no way two people could be together if one person thought they were in love and the other person didn't.
Yeah.
It felt like a total impasse.
Right. And it was so unfair because he obviously got to plan. Like, he made this whole night. He had all the control over where they went and what they did, and he knew he was going to say it. She didn't know. And she doesn't get to think about it. It was really scary and stressful. I was like, oh, God.
Of course she doesn't get to think about it. I mean, what? How else?
It's just something you know, Rebecca.
First of all, not only is it something you know, but it's something you need to know on my time. Like, right, just like what you're saying. Also on your anniversary. Okay, Dean.
It's like, was he in love with her a month ago?
Was this the scene in the barn? Was it in a barn?
No, it wasn't in a barn. It was in a junkyard because he was building her a car and he just revealed that. And they were sitting in the half-built car and he said, Rory, I love you. And she said, oh. And then they broke up. Very formative.
Maybe that did shape me and I just don't remember. I blacked out.
Oh my God, it shaped me so much. Oh,
I'm such a Rory.
It shaped me to the point where, let me tell you this, it shaped me to the point where my first boyfriend and I one day were hanging out and I realized it was our 3-month anniversary and he knew Gilmore Girls and my fear about all that well enough to know not to tell me. He was planning to tell me he loved me that day. But when I said, hey, it's our 3-month anniversary, remember that episode of Gilmore Girls? He was like, oh, and waited because he did not want to recreate that experience.
That's a good guy.
It's true. But still, when he told me he loved me, I was not comfortable or ready or brave enough or something to say it back. And that did cause weirdness. It was really unsettling for that month between when he said it and I eventually said it back. It was not a good
month. There is such a bias, a time bias, right? Mm-hmm. Like, everyone has their own sort of expectation of how long you're with someone before it makes sense to tell them that you have certain feelings for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, 3 months, I hear 3 months, and I think you're out of your mind.
Like, too early.
way too early.
Yeah.
But, you know, I should feel honestly the opposite. Like, based on my experience, I've been in so many long relationships, 2 years plus, in which I was like, I'm just waiting to fall in love with these people. I'm just waiting to feel the same way about them that they feel about me. Mm. And if I just, first of all, if I didn't feel the pressure to sort of match them, perhaps it would have been pressure. Much less stressful. Mm-hmm. And the relationship might have been more positive. But also, if I had just listened to my own, or not listened to my own bias about time and how long it makes sense before you tell someone that you love them, and just established, like, first of all, the trust that they felt, the feelings that they felt for me, right? Because they told me pretty early, or made it clear pretty early, that they had these really intense feelings for me, which I was like, how can you possibly know? Like, you don't even know me. We don't even know each other. Like, we haven't done X, Y, and Z. Like, we haven't even been to the Bahamas. Whatever. I've never been to the Bahamas, but...
So you can never be in love.
Yeah, these weird benchmarks that I set.
Yeah.
But if I had just sort of had more loose boundaries around that, as far as, like, oh, it's been 3 months, and, like, maybe it's okay that I'm not in love with them, and not only is it okay that I'm not in love, but maybe I should, like, take that and, like, understand that my emotions aren't becoming more intense and I'm not, like, nothing's really changing, and just sort of understand that, like, perhaps this is it and maybe I should end the relationship, right? Like, if I'm not happy with the state of my affection for the other person, maybe it's not a matter of time.
That's interesting. I was also reflecting on that in a different way, just thinking about how I also used to really judge people who said I love you to each other early in their relationship. I'd be like, you don't know. Like, I'd be like, oh, these people, like, they're just jumping into things. Now I'm like, why was I mad about that? Like, some people probably just, I mean, the thing about love, I guess, like all feelings, is that it's very personal, right? Like, different things make me angry than make other people angry, and to different degrees. Some people get really angry really fast and some don't, right? It's like, of course, some people fall in love easily and some don't. And, like, I mean, this is maybe judgmental too, because some people do this, but it's like one thing for you to get married after a week. But if you say I love you after a week, because that's how you feel, like, that doesn't have to be a problem. So I was thinking about that.
Right. I mean, what this is now bringing up for me is, like, how much power the language has, right? Like, literally nothing in the relationship has changed. The way you're acting towards each other doesn't change. And just because these words are now out in the ether, not only are you perceiving each other perhaps differently, but everyone is perceiving you differently.
Yeah.
And that is, I think that's a big part of what scares the shit out of me. Like, the first time I told someone that I loved them, well, the first time was, we don't have to talk about that. But the second time, when I was, like, absolutely certain that I was in love with my partner, they had already said it to me, assured me I didn't have to say it back. I did not say it back. It had been a couple weeks maybe. And I was like feeling it really intensely. I was just like, it was bubbling up like lava inside me. And I was just like, I have to say this. I'm going to burst. And it was like, we were about to go to bed. We were both so tired. We were laying in the dark in silence for like 40 minutes prior. And I just sort of meekly said, I love you. And I didn't, it took so much of me to say that the response, which I believe was something like, I love you too. Like, the person had already said it, so they were just like, maybe trying not to make a big deal out of it. But I remember being so devastated. Like, I was like, I thought something was going to happen. I thought that confetti was going to fall. I thought that the music was going to start playing.
Like on The Sims, when they have sex and the fireworks happen.
Yeah, right. Like, what a buildup. And then I just started crying silently in the dark.
Oh, it's so sad. I feel like I kind of had a different experience once where, like, someone had told me they loved me and I, like, wasn't trying to say it back. But not because I necessarily didn't. I just felt super confused. And finally, like, I just felt so bad that I was, like, making them insecure that I, like, said it. And I, like, felt like it was probably true, but... But then they were so happy, and I was just, like, overwhelmed. Like, nothing was bad. I was just like, oh, my God, this is such a big deal to them, and I just feel so unsure about what this even means.
Right. There's also this, like, sort of pervasive narrative of the couple who says that they love each other And then quite soon after, like, things sort of fall apart on one end. That's true. And then the retaliation of, like, but you just said you loved me. Like, you told me you loved me the other day. And sort of this conflation between a feeling and the stability of a relationship and the functionality of two people being together, which is not true.
Right. That makes me think, when you said the power of the language, that made me think of a friend I have who was in a relationship a few years ago and told the person he was dating that he loved her. And she said it back, and it was this whole big thing. And then, like, a week or two later, they were talking about their relationship. And she said, to me, I love you means, like, we're in this forever. Like, this is a long-term commitment. He was like, that is not what it means to me. And he was like, I guess I'll stop saying it to you. Because, like, that's not what I meant. So people just have these completely different meanings. It makes me think of the activity we do, the intimacy ladder, where we have people... I think saying I love you is actually on the intimacy ladder.
Can you, I would love for people to hear more about that. Can you discuss a little bit further?
Yeah. So the intimacy ladder is an activity.
I love that activity.
I love it too. And I think I learned it from Stephanie Franklin at the Masakane Center. So giving her full credit. We do it with students a lot, and we give them index cards with different actions on them, like hugging, kissing, arm around the shoulder, revealing a personal secret, sharing a bed, anal sex, oral sex, saying I love you. And we ask students to put those in order from least intimate to most intimate, sometimes by themselves, sometimes in small groups where they have to, like, debate it with their group. And as is predictable, they always are really different. Everyone's intimacy ladder is really different. And it sparks really great conversation about how we have these assumptions that, because to me, kissing is less intimate than oral sex, I think that for you it is, whereas that really might not be true. So yeah, that's what this I love you conversation made me think is, like, for one person, I love you was the top of the intimacy ladder and it meant commitment. And for someone else, it meant I'm really happy to be with you right now. And that's super confusing.
So confusing. It's so confusing. I also struggle still with the fact that I have a lot of love for someone. Like, I just love them. But am I, this whole thing of being in love?
Yeah, let's talk about that.
And the distinction between those two things?
I agree. That's my adult question. My kid question was just like, what does it mean to love someone? My adult question is like, I love a lot of people.
Right. Like,
I could say I'm in love with many of my friends. Like, if I just defined in love a little bit differently, I feel pretty comfortable saying I'm in love with many of my friends if I mean, like, long-term commitment, serious intimacy, shared connection, like, appreciating so many things about them. Like, is the only difference between love and in love the sex part? Which obviously can't be, because there are obviously asexual people who have romantic feelings for people who fall in love. But, like, what are romantic feelings? I really struggle with that. As opposed to just, like, the ways in which I love people I don't have sex with. So I find that whole thing very confusing. I really don't know what in love means versus loving someone. Like, if you have any clarity on that, I would appreciate it.
No, absolutely not. I mean, absolutely not. That's why I think that I was in relationships for so long, because I was like, I really love you.
Right.
But what does that, like, is that enough?
Right.
There's a lot of guilt in that. There's a lot of guilt on the other side. If you're not equally reciprocating emotionally, it's like you sort of feel like you're stringing someone along, or like you're not enough, which is, you know, it sort of eats away at you. I mean, I did a lot when I was younger and in like young relationships of quote unquote, like, looking out for the other person's feelings and being like establishing that, like, you're in love with me. I am not in love with you. This is unhealthy for you. Therefore I will end it. Like, you'll thank me later was sort of my mindset.
You know what? I get so angry at characters in books and movies who do that.
I'm sure.
Like, that's like my biggest pet peeve in, like, romantic comedies or tragedies.
Right. And I didn't really understand until quite recently that you're just stripping someone of their autonomy and their ability to make decisions for themselves. Like, as long as you're being honest about where you're at and your emotions and you're communicating, the other person has the ability to make a choice to be with right. you. And I just, because of what we're fed about love and what that means and what a relationship means when you're in love and the weight that that can carry, I was just like, there's no way this can mm-hmm. work if we're not in the same place in that respect. And I don't think that's true.
No, I don't either.
There was something you said earlier. Maybe we were talking about language, but it reminded me, and I just want to bring it up before I forget. But it just made me think about how we define cheating mm-hmm. and why sort of the pinnacle of cheating for a lot of people is intercourse mm-hmm. and penetrative sex. And thinking about the similar sort of weight that is held between saying I love you and having mm. intercourse.
Yeah.
Like, I guess the conflation a lot of people have between certain sex acts and a certain level of emotional connection.
Yeah. I feel like it's really classic in a teen show. Like after someone, like a couple tells each other they love each other for the first time is when they have sex for the first time. Like that's how it's supposed to go.
Right. Also, I also think that it's a trend in shows and whatever for in life for when someone has cheated on their partner and they tell the partner, the partner's first question is like, well, did you sleep with them? Mm-hmm. Right. Like, it's never like,
do you love them?
It's never like, that's enough. Right. It's never right. Exactly. Right. It's like, well, if you didn't have intercourse with them, we can move on. Right. But if you did, I need a minute or it's unsalvageable.
Yeah. This is different. So I don't know if this makes sense to go to hear from there, but you said something that made me think when you said like, is that enough? Or like, I don't know if that's enough. If when you feel differently from how your partner feels, it made me think about a class I took in college in which I read a novel about a girl whose stepfather, whose mother's boyfriend or husband is very abusive to her. And at first, her mom is in denial about it for a long time, but there comes a point when her mother sees it happening and finally is going to help her, is going to leave this guy and go with her to the hospital. And at the last minute, she turns back to the guy and abandons her daughter, basically, and can't give her daughter the support she needs. And at the time, I felt like this mom can't love her daughter if she treats her like that. But ultimately, I decided, like, no, I believe that this mother loved her daughter. But that wasn't enough, right? It didn't mean anything. I was like, oh, love can exist and not mean anything, right? Like, what's the use of this right. mother loving her daughter? There's nothing mm-hmm. to it. There's no action. There's no care. Like, it's just like a feeling. She loves her. She wants her to be okay, but she won't do the things that she needs. So that led me to think a lot about the word love and how people use it in such different ways. Like, you could feel love for someone and it could not come with any action behind it at all. So that's something that I've thought about since then as well. Like, I love you doesn't mean I'll be there for you. It doesn't mean I'll take care of you. It just means I feel love for you right now.
Right. It can be pretty hollow. And it can also be a very good tool of manipulation, which I feel like mm-hmm. I've experienced over and over again. Like, I think I'm realizing, yes, a lot of the reason that I stayed with certain partners was because of my own feelings of guilt. But I've definitely also been guilted to stay with people because of the but I love you clause, or to be physical with someone because maybe they didn't say that they loved me, but you know, I like you so much, you're so great. And to feel like the exchange of a compliment for a sex act is
yeah.
common.
No, I think when I was doing research for my undergraduate thesis and I was interviewing young women, that was a really common trope I heard was like, well, if you really loved me, you would. Or like, I thought you loved right. me. Or like, don't you know how much I love you?
I mean, the post that seems to get consistent feedback from our photo campaign is the post that says, I didn't know what coercion was even when it was mm-hmm. used on me. And it consistently gets comments from adults mm-hmm. and like much, much older folks than high school students who are the people who are writing these out. of like, I still don't know what that is. What's coercion? I don't know what that means.
I've definitely seen people talk about like, I didn't know what that meant in my marriage. Like, I didn't realize that my husband or my wife could coerce me into sex. And I realize now that's what was happening, or I had to realize it in the course of my marriage and end that relationship.
Ugh, the expectations of sex and the confines of a committed relationship is really strong. Yeah.
Something else that I was thinking about before we started recording is that I, especially in middle school, like before I ever was dating anyone, when I was kind of fixated on this question of like, what does it mean? How do you know when you're in love with someone? I kind of tried to figure out criteria or like a rubric, kind of in the way I was just saying about like love. Like to me, love did mean care or like action. So I was like, okay, if I
made a checklist.
Yeah, I was trying to make a checklist. I remember thinking like, okay, if you're the first one I want to share happy news with, or like if you're the one I want to call when I'm sad, or like if I like always enjoy being around you. Or I was like trying to like, I was trying to tease apart like the pieces of what feeling in love were to be like, cause like love is so abstract. I was like, how will I notice that? But like, I will notice if I feel this way or that way. So if I put those together, does that equal love?
People still do that. I definitely still do that. Mm. I think it's helped me actually. Mm. You're saying it as though it's this sort of, I don't know, wild idea. Like, how can you possibly categorize feelings?
That's funny. I mean, I guess I just didn't know other people did it. I felt kind of embarrassed. But yeah, I guess it makes sense.
No. I mean, again, like, I've had a lot of fuzzy endings to relationships where I've been, you know, so sure I had these really strong feelings, but they weren't quite enough. Mm-hmm. So I've had to go through, like, well, if I don't want to share my good news for you, if I don't feel like you're my support, if I don't feel like you're the person I go to when I want to feel better, then maybe I don't want to be in this still.
That makes a lot of sense.
Like, what are you then to me?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I have a vibrator.
Exactly. Oh, vibrators are really key.
I know. I think they've really advanced our movement.
I agree. Yes. I'm going to shout out Maya McCormick, my friend who gave me my first vibrator at a very key time in my life. So thanks, Maya.
Thanks, Mom.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right that like the criteria was my little seventh grade brain trying to like figure it out. And it was kind of smart, I guess, of me trying to be like, I don't know what the hell love is, but I know what like these kinds of closeness feel like with people I care about.
Do I really need to be in a committed relationship with someone if they're not satisfying me in these sort of checklisted, tiered ways?
Yeah, that makes me think about my first semester in college. I took, or maybe it was my second semester, my first year in college, I took a class about marriage. And I remember my professor saying, we have a model of romantic relationships where we expect one person to be a best friend, a great co-parent, a good economic provider, sexually compatible, and like 7,000 other things, right? Like my biggest emotional support. She was like, what if we met those needs with multiple people? Like, what if my sister is my emotional support and my best friend is my co-parent and my partner meets my sexual needs and this, like, we could split it up? And I feel like that's kind of what love meant to me as a young person was like, love means you're all those things to me. You have to be my best friend. You have to be the person I talk to every day, the person I live with, right? Like, I had never thought about like you could be in a long-term committed adult relationship and live separately. You could be married and live separately or co-parenting kids.
That is my dream.
Right. Like there's so much room for like imagining the just right situation. Now that I am an adult and like have done that learning, I like get to be creative about the ways I want to live my life. But at the time it really felt like there's only one option and that's what love means. So.
Right.
But it really sets people up for failure. It sets people up for codependency and disappointment and like just so much resentment. It's like, why can't you do this for me? Why can't you meet this need? It's like, not everybody can meet all of our needs. But then also what you're saying is like, also these are the needs I do need in a relationship. And if we're going to be in a relationship, you do need to meet those needs. So that makes sense too.
Right. I'm now thinking of all the conversations I've had with my close friends who I'm not romantic with of like, if only we were attracted to each other.
Yeah.
Right. I think it's because it's so rare at least in my experience, like the number of times I've tried to suggest an open relationship with my partners and they've just been like, no, I don't think so. Like, I just feel like it's quite rare to find someone organically who you're like connected with romantically, who you still want to like be with physically and be like, hey, let's open shit up.
Yeah. People have a lot of hangups about that.
I think I do.
Yeah, I feel like the polyamorous community, like, I've never been in a polyamorous relationship exactly, but I feel like the polyamorous community has still offered good models for my life. Even if it's not many sexual partners, it's still many partners in a way, right? Like, my sister is a partner to me in a big way. Like, we are committed to, like, living on the same block and, like, being really present in each other's lives. And then my roommate is a partner to me in a big way. And then, like, I have friends who are all partners to me in big ways, and if I were to enter a romantic relationship, that would be one more partner, right? It wouldn't be the new or the main person in my life. They would be like one of many parts of a constellation of support and love that I have. So I feel like I've kind of learned that from polyamorous people.
I was just thinking about polyamory and love and how I think a lot of people have hangups about not being able to be in love with more than one person.
Yeah.
We have this certain finite amount of emotional space.
Mm-hmm.
And one person can somehow take up all of it.
Yeah. Someone literally said that to me in college once, and it really made me angry. He said, evolutionarily, this is a little different, but he said, evolutionarily, we're only capable of having like love or connection or empathy for a certain amount of people. And it's small. It's like based on like old villages. Like, we can't have community in a city, or we can't like have empathy or like connection with very many people, because we're all meant to be evolutionarily in villages and only like connected to our families or something. So like, we can't love that many people. I was just like, speak for yourself. I can, like, I do and I am. So there. He was like, you're being so emotional. Like, I'm talking about science. I was like, yeah, okay, I'm talking about science too. The science of I know my own self. And like, I was so mad. I'm still mad, obviously. But yeah, I think
you're getting red. Or maybe it's a sunburn.
Maybe. But yeah, people definitely feel that way. Like, it's just not possible. You're like, my love for you cancels out my love for you. I love this person now. I can't love you anymore.
Right. Yeah, it's like the algebra of emotions.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you can be angry at a million people. Why can't you love a million people?
Yeah, that's so true. And we know you can, because people love their family and they love many family members, right? Why is familial love like open to many people? So we have many, like, friend love is open to many, but romantic love is just one person. Like, how can we not see that's a social construct?
Well, Izzy, you only have one vaginal opening.
Right, that's so. Really what it is. But I have a mouth, Rebecca. I have a mouth and I have a butt, okay? So that should be at least three people I can
at
love.
At least three. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Maybe I'll put that on my Tinder. I have room for three. Room for three loves.
Okay, well, on that note, if a young person were to ask you, how do I know if I'm in love? What would you say?
I don't know. I've truly, clearly, still haven't given any thought to how I would answer this question. I think that if you find yourself thinking, do I love this person? That can be enough.
Mm.
You don't need to know it. It's okay if you say it, if you mean it. And if the next day you don't feel the same way, that's okay too. And that love looks really different depending on who it's with and who you're considering saying it to. And because of that, it can be kind of confusing.
I love that answer.
I
love the part about you don't have to know. You never have to know. Because that's the opposite of, like, you'll just know. Because then you feel so crazy when you don't know. It's like, you might never know, and it's fine. That's enough. I love that.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, I would love to have the conversation of, like, if anyone's ever pressuring you into feeling like you should say you love them.
Red flag.
That's not okay. Yeah. Big red flag. Yeah, get him out of there, ref.
If I ever have my own classroom, I will definitely have a giant red flag on one wall with just a running list as things come up. Just like, add it to the red flag list. That's my dream.
I love that.
Thank you.
I'd love to put that over my bed.
Right? I was thinking I could just do it in my own apartment. I don't need a classroom.
Amazing. You definitely don't, but it would be really powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What would you say?
I was thinking that, similar to what you said, just that it love means something really different to everyone. It's one kind of feeling, and you get to describe, like, you get to decide how to describe your own feelings, right? Like, there's no right or wrong way to describe your feelings. So, like, love is just feeling, and if you say you're feeling, they'll believe you. And I think I was going to say something like what we were talking about before, like, some people fall in love really easily, and some people, you know, maybe fall in love more rarely or need more time, and there's nothing wrong with either of those things. Because I feel like people get shamed for, like, falling in love a lot, but also for not. So there's nothing wrong with either. They're both fine. There are lots of...
There is a sort of magical middle ground. Sorry, I interrupted
That's
you.
Okay.
Where that's, like, societally acceptable.
Right, yeah. You're supposed to fall in love just enough. It's like, oh, okay. And just to say, like, there are lots of kinds of love. Like, talk about family love, talk about friend love, and no one kind of love. Pet love, right? Like, there's no one kind of love is better than any other. Like, you probably know you love your dog. Like, that's valid. That's good love. So just, like, validating all of those things.
I love that. Mm. I love
what
that.
What does that mean? Okay. I feel like we're one step closer.
I do feel like we're a couple of steps closer.
Okay. Good.
I also think, though it's obvious, in that exchange we just had where I said that I loved that and you said, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. The thing that came to mind was it's a positive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a good feeling.
Yeah. Right.
It should feel good.
It should. It should feel good. That's important to say. I love that, too.
Right. I think that's important to me. I said it sort of as, like, sort of like a throwaway, but I think that's really important.
I think it's really important,
too.
It's like, if this relationship that you're trying to figure out, if it's a loving one, is, like, making you miserable or stressed or, like, it's not fun.
Anxious.
Yeah. It's like, there's no reason to do it then. Like, love is good and fun. Not all the time, right? Like, it has hard parts. It has ups and downs. It's sometimes really dramatic because it's such a big feeling, especially when you're young. But all the time, really. But, yeah, it should be good, like, most of the time.
It should be good.
Yeah,
right.
That's so important.
And the importance of, like, it can feel really big, but it isn't a binding spell.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And just also validating to young people that they can feel love and they can be in love. So many adults are like, you don't know, puppy love, like, wait, you know, whatever. It's like, yeah.
Truly the biggest emotions I've ever felt.
Right.
And they were, I just like that gaslighting is beyond me of like, you feel it really big now. Like, it feels really important. In a few years, you'll be like, I was so silly. That wasn't it. It's like, excuse me.
Like, what is the difference?
I'm living in this big whirlwind right now.
Exactly.
And I don't need you to tell me that I'll look back on myself and feel dumb about it. Like, what?
Right. And what's the difference between something being important and feeling important also? Like,
right.
Right now, it's important to me. Like, just because it won't be later doesn't mean it isn't now.
Right.
Yeah, ridiculous. So, any young people out there, we love you. We love your love. Keep loving.
We love your love. Keep loving.
Yeah. Once again, we want to remind you about our Patreon, which allows us to make this happen. It allows us to host the podcast and pay our guests. We're not at the point yet where we can pay ourselves, but maybe you'll be the tipping point there. So patreon.com/yes2consent is how you can find that. It's in our description. And we want to once again thank our amazing sex ed sustainers, our patrons who are giving us $12 a month so that we can make this happen. So thank you to Susan Abraham, Alexandra Wolkoff, Molly Waggett, Katie Gifford, and Leonard. We love you guys. So for everybody else, please subscribe, please review, rate and review our podcast. We haven't really been asking people to do that, but it's actually really important. So if you like this, tell people.
I think it'd be really cool to engage with you in a way where you like maybe tell us something that resonated with you and we can bring it up in the next episode and sort of discuss that further. That would be really exciting.
Please find a way to talk to us. That would be awesome. So
yeah, I could use some friends.
We all could use some connection in this lonely time.
Seriously.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
This podcast is hosted by me, Rebecca Klein, and Izzy Abraham Raveson. Edited by Izzy Abraham Raveson. Original music by Austin Alfano. Artwork by Rebecca Klein and Jackie Soro. And a special thanks to the young people who asked the questions and inspired this podcast.
A special thank you to Mike Morangello for mixing this season.